Hey guys, and welcome back to Percussion Perspective. This is Remy.
This is Kevin.
And today we're going to talk about tips for rehearsing percussion ensemble. We're kind of at the beginning of this spring semester, and hopefully you have your percussion ensembles chosen, or I mean, I guess if you don't, that's okay. It depends on when your contest and all of that stuff is, or concerts. But you know, we figured this would be a good time to talk about this. This would be, you know, applicable for the season that we're in right now. And so we're going to have a chat about how we rehearse our percussion ensembles. But first, Kevin, how's it going, dude?
It's pretty good. We are in the middle of snow day number two.
Yeah.
So kind of crazy. But yeah, doing good.
Yeah, this is that if you're listening, you know, in the future, which will literally be everyone. Sorry, I cut you off. The face that you just made at me was this is, we're kind of in the middle or the end of whatever that the big storm through Oklahoma, Texas. I think it went all the way up to like Tennessee. I've got yeah. Friends that have parents that live in Tennessee said they like lost power and stuff. So anyway, We're blessed here. We didn't really have any issues other than, I mean, school's been closed the last 2 days. My school put out an announcement. They said they would make a decision by 5 p.m. It is now 2:44 p.m. So Central Standard Time.
Okay. They decide it at a different time.
Yeah. Pacific. Specific. Anyway. You done anything cool over the snow day other than make more drum videos?
No, my mother had a knee surgery, so I had to got the pleasure of spending my day in a hospital just waiting out the surgery. So
did you go around and like visit all of the ill people and try to encourage them and buy them all their favorite candy bars from the vending machine?
I didn't actually. I didn't.
You're like, yeah, I spent $80 on 5 candy bars.
Well, it was a snowstorm, and so I just broke open the thing because it was like I felt like we were in survival mode.
You're like, so, Kevin Malone punching the vending machine during the fire.
Yeah, this is completely unrelated, but it was funny when the snow started coming in on what was that, Friday night?
Friday night.
Like the first thing that we saw on the TV was Day After Tomorrow.
No, it's like, yeah.
It's like that watching the Titanic on a cruise.
Dude, that show, I mean, that movie, I remember from being a kid middle school or something when that came out. After it came out, I don't know what the time, what the window of time is when like movies can then be shown on TV, you know? But it seems like that movie would be shown every weekend. Like if I didn't have something to do on the weekend and I was flipping through channels, that would be on like USA or FX or like one of those channels. That was one of those shows that was, or one of those movies was on all the time.
And
it was not a good movie. Like,
oh, I loved it.
Really?
Oh,
you
gosh,
did?
My thing was loud.
Was not in it.
Yeah. I mean, I like
someone just got in an accident probably.
I like, like any kind of movie like that. That's kind of like, survival.
Did you like 2012? Did you watch that movie?
I have seen it, but I didn't like watch it enough. You know how you can like get into a movie and watch it a lot, and like, so that one I didn't really.
Yeah, you don't have a tattoo of that movie on your.
No, I do have Day After Tomorrow on the bottom of my big toe.
Oh, that's good. Really small.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, percussion ensemble. Cool. Well, do you want to start us off here with a tip for rehearsing percussion ensemble?
Yeah. And my first thing is I was actually going to ask you, you know, every time I go to the second round Allstate that happens, like I remember this happens every year. Like I plop down and everyone's like, well, everybody picked out your percussion ensembles yet? And I'm always like, well, actually, no, I haven't. And everyone else is like, yeah, I have. So I was going to ask you, like, when do you pick your pieces, or at least like feel like you know what you're going to play?
Honestly, man, that's a really good question. I really start thinking about it kind of during marching band. Like, you know, you start getting into, you spend so much time with the kids and you start seeing what their strengths and weaknesses are as far as like who are your lead players, like who are going to be your horses for the year, and like as a group, what are our strengths and what are our weaknesses and things. So we're playing four pieces total with my high school kids. And I guess we're really going to talk high school. I mean, I don't know. We can talk middle school too. I haven't chose all my middle school stuff yet because we're still having to have honor band auditions with our middle school kids this weekend, which don't get me, we can talk about that later, but yeah, I don't pick anything for them until after I'm just trying to get on the other side of that. So anyway, yeah, honestly, I start thinking about it probably sometimes as early as band camp, like depending on how band camp's going, like, but that's just ideas going in my head. I don't really choose anything. I would say when I really start thinking about it is the space between the end of marching band and like Christmas break. I start thinking, I start listening, I start going through my library and finding what I want to do. And then definitely trying to have things chosen and music out to them by the first or second week of the first semester, usually. Or sorry, second semester.
Yeah. You want to ask me what I do?
Yeah. What do you, so Kevin, when you choose your percussion ensembles, what is the rough time frame that you use to choose your percussion ensemble?
I didn't know you were going to ask this.
You're catching me on the spot here.
Hang on. Let's come back to that one. No, I actually am very specific about it. I always, Thanksgiving break, I always like pick out a day and I like go to a coffee shop and plop down and like listen to as much music as I can and get them all categorized, and then probably end up making final decisions. And the kids have music in their hands before Christmas break. Is about my goal, because
yeah, that's awesome.
Because then I know that the moment we get back from school, it's like I feel like we've been back from Christmas break, but I feel like we've only taught a few days with just like honor bands or all state stuff and now the weather. So those percussion ensemble concerts and those solo and ensemble contests always sneak up on us way faster than we think they're going to. So
yeah, that's a really good idea.
I just do that because I know it's going to take a while. Like I might end up changing my mind or whatever. So,
well, and you're, we've talked before, you know, privately, but it seems like you're able to order things easier through your school. Like,
yeah,
oftentimes I just end up buying a piece. Like, I'll play, okay, we're going to play four pieces this semester. I'm going to, you know, play two. I'm going to play two of them from our library, and then I'm going to borrow one from somebody, and then I'm going to purchase this one for my, like, this is one that I should have personally, and I'm going to buy it. So yeah, we can get to like maybe what we have programmed for this semester here in a little bit. Maybe
no, we'll have that where people have to pay for that.
An after show. Yeah. If you would like to join Percussion Perspective Plus, the link is in the bio.
Ooh, that's not true.
It's not. But
maybe in the future.
Yeah. We call it Pianissimo for short. PPP. It's not short though. It's like just as long. How many syllables would that be? Percussion Perspective Plus. That's seven. How many syllables is pianissimo? P-I-A? Is that
five?
Pianissimo.
We're hitting 10 minutes in on this already.
Yeah, that's all right.
We
ask one question though. So that's true. So, you know, maybe for all of you people out there listening, like Christmas break would be a good, like, you know, if you don't have your stuff picked out by Christmas break to give your kids by the, you know, first part of that semester, maybe kind of try to put that in your schedule and the time in between marching band and the end of that first semester. That's a good goal. Okay. Well, let me ask you then, sir, when you plan your percussion ensembles, because this, you know, actually choosing your ensembles and how you're going to split your kids up impacts your rehearsal quite a bit, right? So like this year we are doing one large piece with everybody, like a percussion orchestra piece with my ensemble one and my ensemble two. And then each ensemble is doing kind of their own thing also. I split my top ensemble up into two different chamber groups. And then I split, and then my second ensemble is just doing one, you know, larger piece altogether. So when you are choose, how much does that go into your rehearsal planning? Do you know what I say? Do you know what I'm asking?
So it's you're okay asked, if you say no. So you're asking like, how do I pick what kids go in each ensemble?
No, how do you, how does,
oh, I get what you're saying. Like when the high school bands rehearse, like how do I decide like who's going to go in what based on what ensemble that they're in?
No, as I didn't do a very good job of asking that question, I guess. Right. How does
we're so good at this.
Yeah, I've confused myself now. How does like the ensembles that you have chosen, depending, maybe you chose like one large one and then a bunch of small ones, like just say you do that, how is that going to go in, how are you going to rehearse for that versus if you just did like two with your top group and two with your bottom group?
Oh, I see. I mean, it depends on what the piece is and what the parts are, but I would assume that I would look at like which kids I have on which parts and try to rehearse like the mallet parts together for a while, or try to rehearse the battery stuff together for a while. Or, I mean, I'm pretty lucky. I pretty much just, whenever I want to take percussion kids out of their concert band rehearsal to do percussion ensemble stuff, like it's, I just do it. You know, when it gets closer to like concert band contest, then I try to keep them in as long as I can. But, This year I didn't do that. What your question is. So I probably haven't gone into much thought about it, but I didn't do a piece with everyone.
Okay. Like so, you're not doing like a combined. Yeah. I mean, I don't do that every year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I don't have that good of an answer.
That's okay. That was kind of not a great question now that I tried to say it out loud for 10 minutes. Okay. Well, you just want to get into the tips then, like we sure. Each asked a question. So my first one is, and this, you know, I just went through this whole process on a piece that we're playing this semester, but my first tip is take your percussion ensembles, put them in order of like which one is going to take the most rehearsal time, you know? And that can be, if you just look at kind of look at, you know, how many weeks do I have until our first performance or whatever, and then start backtracking from there. Like, okay, well, if I want to get all the way through the piece, but say you have 10 weeks, that's an easy number, before your first rehearsal. Well, week 10 is the performance week. So that does not need to be a week where you're learning notes or putting things together. Now, oftentimes for kids, it is, because they're like, oh, crap, we have a concert on Thursday and I've got to learn this or whatever. But when you're planning, you know, you don't want to plan for that. So I would say start with the one that you think is going to be the most difficult, and then kind of create a timeline for that. And then that will help you know where you can fit in, you know, the smaller pieces or the chamber pieces, the ones that are not going to take as much time. And so the first thing that I do is, you know, find the one that is going to take the most time. And I immediately create like sections in that. So I'll just say the big piece that we're playing this semester is Honer by David Mislenka. Really awesome piece of music, just like one of the staples in percussion ensemble literature that has been written in the last, you know, 20 years. But it's a really long piece, and there's also no rehearsal markings. So thanks a lot, David Mislenka. There's just like some measure numbers that don't really coincide with the phrasings or actual musical sections of the piece, you know, which he's kind of his edit, whoever edits his stuff. I feel like it was his, one of his sons or something for a while, but he's kind of infamous for that. Really great music, but it does make it a little bit hard to rehearse. So I immediately first went in with the score and listened a lot, and just like created sections. And then I made a document and then like put that up for my kids to see, okay, this, you know, section one is beginning to 36 and section two is 36 to 71 or, you know, like whatever the measure numbers are. And some sections are only like 10 measures because there's a ton of notes in them. Maybe the marimbas have like a bunch of 32nd notes that are all offset, and but it has to sound like one person, you know, with like 16 arms playing the part. Or maybe some sections are like really long. Maybe they're like 40 measures or 50 measures because there's not a whole lot happening yet, like texture wise. So anyway, that's my first tip is create sections in your score to then work through, you know, methodically.
Yeah. And that's kind of how we both went through college also. Cause like up on the schedule of
right
would always be like percussion ensemble one blank, blank piece A to B or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like the goal.
And I
is,
do. Yeah. I do that with all my kids now with all my ensembles.
Yeah. The goal is to get to a certain point, and then if you make it, you push forward even farther. Yeah. I kind of have, I really haven't gone, I used to do that a lot, and I haven't gone that deep into like sending out to kids and being like, okay, today's goal is blank. Cause what I try to do first is like before, and it's kind of like it kind of goes with my personal schedule. Cause I always take the kids to Allstate. So then my goal is like, we have hit every measure of every percussion ensemble piece by the time I leave and do that for a couple of days. And okay. I think we were not successful doing that this year because we just weren't. That's a good tip because it tells the kids like they don't have to sit there and try to learn the whole thing. They can make sure they learn it in chunks and break it apart, and it can make them feel like they maybe don't have to. They can try to perfect small sections at once or at small chunks.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't do this with every single piece, like some pieces, especially with middle school kids, you know, right. It's just like, all right, we're just going to get through this as fast as we can basically. And then fix things along the way.
Yeah.
I mean, some like that's pretty impressive that you, so what is that like 3 weeks and you've tried to read all your notes basically.
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's impressive. Like it, again, that kind of depends on the type of ensemble that you're doing. If you do a really keyboard heavy ensemble, then that's going to be pretty hard.
Yeah. And
you're
like,
gonna have
even
a lot
if we
of kids that aren't playing their parts.
Yeah. Even if we quote unquote, like made it through, like it doesn't necessarily mean that every single kid can play everything like you
right.
just said, but I think
you've been through it.
Yeah. There's a positive note to that, to like it's at least they've like had their eyes on it, and
yeah,
so it gives
you've seen everything.
Yeah, it gives them an idea of like, oh, C to D is actually my hardest part, and
sure.
The ending is repetitive at the beginning part, so they know what. So yeah, it's kind of like you pick what you want to, if you want them to have the whole thing in their hands, because there's been times where I'm like, you know, two weeks or so away from a contest, and it's like, oh my gosh, we have not like. We've barely touched the ending.
Yeah. Well, and there's been lots of times too, where the part that I thought was going to be the hard part was not the hard part. You know, it was actually the beginning, because it was like this weird untimed thing and
right.
Like, you know, kind of sporadic randomness. And like, to me, that seems easy, but I've been a musician for a long time and played a lot of pieces like that. And, you know, for high school kids, a lot of the time when they have to do random noises, bowing suspended cymbals, they're freaked out by that. And like, they need a lot more reps on that than they do, you know, than something that you would think would be choppy and difficult. So, yeah, I like that. I mean, just running through everything kind of gives you a good starting point too. It's wrong, but I like it.
Yeah, well. Okay. I wrote down a lot of things, and I kind of don't know if I'm hitting all of them, but
yeah, I mean, whatever. We're already 3 hours in,
right? That'd be crazy. Okay, I would say my first one is
your first one.
Well, yeah, technically, this is my first one.
Yeah, I know.
It would be sort of similar to scheduling out your sections, but also don't be weirded out to have keyboard sectionals and battery sectionals. Like if you've got, like I've got a piece right now that I'll talk about a piece that I'm doing. It's called Ellipsis. And it's got eight people and it's basically front row, eight keyboards, back row, eight percussionists. You know, it's
that's two 16. Court.
Sorry, four and four, four, and four, four keyboards okay. and four. I, okay. So yeah, it's two quartets, four drummers and four keyboards. And so it makes a lot of sense in that case. Like, okay, I'm going to have a mallet sectional and then have a battery sectional because a lot of that stuff lines up. And if they're not lining up, then the keyboards aren't going to line up. And it's just, I mean, I think everyone on here knows what a sectional is, so I don't need to go too deep into that. But if you're having, you know, struggles getting parts learned or lining up things, then just like we do in concert band and marching band, have sectionals to be able to really clean up, that stuff. And a lot of the times when you're rehearsing percussion ensemble, your drummers, if the part is not too crazy, then you're sitting there helping the keyboards and they're back there kind of bored. So maybe mix and match their rehearsal time, so they're not just kind of sitting there. And you can, you know, even if you're pulling kids in first hour, be like, okay, I'm going to have, we're going to do 30 minutes of keyboards and then 30 minutes of the battery guys. And then maybe the last 15, however long you have of trying to put stuff together.
That was one of my tips too. And I'm glad that you kind of related it to like marching band. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like the drum parts are different than the front ensemble parts. And like, everybody knows how difficult it is to learn music together. Like there's a reason that it's easier to do it separately. So, And I mean, that's what we do. And so when I think through, I'm like, oh, this week we should, when we're going through this section, I don't even need I only need you if you play marimba or vibes. I don't even need you this, you know, on this rehearsal, if you play any of the percussion parts, because these should be sight readable, you know, at a performance later on in this, or at a rehearsal later on in the semester.
Yeah,
that's a good tip. Don't, you know, I guess it depends on your school and your situation. Maybe, you know, it might just be like, you have to take all your percussionists when you do percussion ensemble. I don't know, but don't feel like you have to rehearse with everybody every single time. That's a good one. Well, my next one, it kind of just goes along with my first one of creating sections. So the next one is, once I create those sections in the score, then I make a rehearsal schedule that refers to that. I guess we could, if you're curious about seeing this, I guess we could like put a link to it in the episode notes or something. It's like just a Google Doc, and we've got like a percussion bulletin board in our percussion room, and it's, you know, whenever people lose music, I like tack it up there, or whenever I've got like audition signups or announcements or whatever, like all the info goes there. So I just like printed it off and put it there, and it has, you know, one side of it, it has a table, that is like the sections, what measures they are, and kind of the highlights of that section. Like marimbas have lots of 30 seconds, bells have weird rhythms, timpani is also really important, or something like that, and like a description of that section. And then on the bottom half, it just has our schedule. Like week one, we're doing section two. Week two, we're doing sections one and two. Week three, we're doing sections four and five. Week six, you know, like that. I don't know if anybody even cares. Maybe I described it fine, but I guess I can put that in the episode notes if that would be helpful. And then you can kind of see an example of what we're talking about. But that just keeps you, I think it's real easy to get bogged down. And like Kevin said, contests and concerts tend to sneak up on us. And it's like all of a sudden we got bogged down and we've only been halfway through the piece. And then we have a contest in 2 weeks. And then you just have to kind of like fumble through the rest of the piece. And I've had that happen before as well. So just starting with a schedule to kind of keep yourself on track, you know, it's a lot easier to cram the piece if you've been through all of it in the last 2 weeks than try to cram through 50% of the piece that you haven't even read yet. So
yeah,
sticking to a schedule, I think, helps. So that's like, yeah, create a rehearsal schedule.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. My next one is basically when you're trying to like it, when let's say you've kind of already gone through the pieces and you are trying to clean it up. A big thing is do big chunks often and like let your kids kind of feel what it's like to have to do like really big chunks, even though maybe you haven't done it yet. Like let's say you've got you know, first chunk is kind of good, middle's kind of good, ending's decent, but you haven't tried beginning all the way to the middle of the piece, then do that. I do this with my eighth grade. We're playing Scuttlebutt in eighth grade. You've played that. I mean, everybody's
probably Casella, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a
Mr. Casella.
Sorry, Dr. Casella.
And so it's one of those pieces where like that piece just kind of keeps adding parts, especially the big intro. And yeah, I will just be like, okay, guys, we're doing a big chunk. We're going to go beginning all the way to whatever. And then they kind of all give me like a terrified look because they're like, we haven't done that. And I'm like, yeah, but we're about to do it. And then guess what? We can say that we've done it. And I mean, it's normally like really bad.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's hard. It.
It's hard. Yeah, well, you it's hard to make. Okay. Can I go ahead? You start to realize, like, oh, I can play A to B and I can play B to C, but I can't play A to C. Like something about the transition, or sometimes maybe like just, yeah, connecting. And that just kind of another tip, but connecting phrases is hard, or connecting sections is hard. So yeah, hitting these big parts like exposes those things.
And I think this is probably more of a tip for like eighth grade and under. Cause I mean, high school kids generally can kind of work through those transition issues quicker because they've been through marching band and they can understand that concept better. But definitely eighth grade, seventh grade, sixth grade, you know, fifth grade, fourth grade, third grade, 12th grade, you can wow, that went over your head. You didn't even hear that.
Sorry, my wife texted me. Can you restart? Can you try one more time?
I said I think it's really good for like eighth grade and younger. So like 8, 7, 6.
Oh, and then you went up
5, 4, yeah.
3, 2, blast off. We're going to the moon in a few days, as you know. Anyway.
No. We should cover it live.
Yeah.
Anyway.
If you believe in that sort of thing.
I just think that's a good concept to do with your group. It brings about new issues and it just helps the kids like keep going. I have too many issues with kids like they mess up and they just like they're done. They just can't.
They just shrug.
Yeah. And I'm like,
I don't know.
I'm like, we are not gonna do that. Like if you're gonna be in a class with me, you're gonna push through and keep going, because obviously that leads into quitting other things in life. It's like it's all helpful. So
yeah, quitting smoking, quitting vaping.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Next. Okay, well, cool. Next one, really to go on with that. Is rehearse your transition sections. So like, you know, say, so, okay, you're playing Scuttlebutt, right? We're playing Stormbreak. Do you know that one? That's another Mr. Casella.
I've had it for years. I've never actually played it.
Dude, it's super groovy. I love that piece.
It's got the, like I have a version that's with wind ensemble.
Yeah. I think the actual percussion ensemble was written first, because I remember playing it in high school. I think it was written like 2007.
Okay.
And then, which I probably played it like 3 years later or something. But, and then, yeah, I don't know if he maybe went back and added wind ensemble parts. I've never heard that added in. But
yeah, I haven't.
I was going to throw it at like to our second concert band, because it's my second ensemble that is playing Stormbreak. And I was going to give him the music and be like, yo, we should like just put this on the end of the year concert or something, because we're already going to have it learned if he needs another piece. So I'll talk to him about that. But anyway, so, you know, Jim Casella likes to write like solo sections in his ensembles.
Yep.
And so transitioning between like, you know, into or out of those solo sections a lot of the time is really tricky. And so, you know, when you're rehearsing, you can't just start on, hey, we're going to start on the timpani solo, or we're going to start on the snare drum solo. And and this might seem like really basic and simple and obvious, but, you know, if it's like, instead of starting on letter D, start two bars before letter D, right? Like work the crescendo or the decrescendo or the punctuation of the previous phrase that then changes into something else. Cause that's what makes it music, right? Like that's what makes it art, is how it moves from one idea to another. And you don't want it to just sound like beep, beep, boop, bop, boop, beep, bop, boop. And then next section, beep, 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 boop, beep, 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 boop, beep. Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like everything's got to flow in.
Yeah. I'm sad you didn't go Nickelodeon.
Beep, 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 Nickelodeon. We're going to get sued. Yeah. So work transitions. That's my next tip.
Yeah. I like that. I'm going to give two. These are tips for the kids.
Oh, I love that. I love the kids.
I think we have a lot of, I think we get a lot of emails from like students who listen. So make sure that you've got your measures numbered.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just and for the, you know, I think most of the time our scores end up having it nowadays.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like older pieces, a lot of Jared Spears stuff that I end up doing with younger kids that it's not. So I always tell, like, first day I'm passing out stuff, I'm like, number your measures. Like, make sure I can yell out 175,063 and you can find that measure like really fast. And I don't have to like, we don't have to do the counting game every single time. So
yeah, it wastes a lot of time. This is something I don't have my kids do all the time. Or I don't have them do it ever really, but I should.
I know that I want to yell out measures. And so, yeah. And even if I, like, if I say that and I'll have kids, they'll have it done by the end of semester or end of the semester, end of the rehearsal. Cause they'll just do like five measures every time they can. And
right.
I used to be like, no, do that at home. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like if they're getting it done, they're getting
it. Yeah, exactly. Do that at home. You need to be listening to me when I'm talking to the suspended cymbal player. yeah, that's a good tip. One thing that I will do is not quite. Okay. I have a timer going off on my phone. I'm sorry about that. That was my timer to start lessons, but we're not in school today. Nice. So yeah, I have like a little half tip on that one. So I won't do measure numbers. I don't make my kids do that, but a lot of the times I will create my own, rehearsal markings. So like, we're going to call that like, you know, F.5 or something, right? Like we'll create a little, especially if there's like a large section and like, hey guys, we always seem to be starting at measure 42 and but there, you know, that's like halfway through E and F or something. So we create like, you can just do a measure number or whatever, but like call that something and create a shortcut if that's a spot that you go to a lot. So yeah, but I do like the measure number things. It does make it way easier when you have to find those little ones. And I would even go as far as like, I would write out every single syllable of all the notes that you play. So no. Like measure 44 and then one T, te, ta, two, te, te, ta, te, te, like that.
And then have your keyboard players write all their notes.
Yeah, every single one. Above every that way they don't get one. That way they don't get lost. That way they're thinking about the note names when they're playing.
Right. That's really good.
Yeah, that's all. This is all sarcasm.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I've got like a B with that.
Oh, of course.
This is another tip for the kids, but when you are, and I guess directors, to make sure your kids are doing this, like if you're not able to do sectionals and you've got a kid has downtime, I am always on those kids. Like, especially if it's a keyboard kid, to be like, if I'm helping someone else, I'll be like, go through your part.
Yeah.
Like, I try not to let any of those kids, and I know that we all do this, especially in like, I mean, you should be doing this in like concert band and jazz band and whatever, but like, I try not let them have any like downtime in rehearsals, because again, we've got to learn this music and put it together in like 2 weeks.
Right.
Sorry, 2 months. And so if you're a kid, never be that kid that's like, duh, I'm going to take 5 minutes and just sit down. It's like, no, you can maybe do that once your part is like perfect. So yeah, number your measures and never have kids sit there and like not be trying to do something productive during rehearsals.
Yeah, I really try to get on my students about that, like really early on, and not saying that you don't, but really early on. So like actually just this last week, I had to blow up my seventh graders pretty good. It was like, we've been preparing for honor band tryouts, right? So this last week, I was sending my seventh graders with the full band. They're reading through their contest music for OSSAA. And then I would like pull the kids that are auditioning for NBDA separately for honor band separately, just for like 10 minutes per kid, and just help, just kind of like do a check-in. And I started like after the first or second day, I started getting something from the other directors like, hey, the percussionists aren't really doing what they need to do, and they're kind of screwing around and blah, blah, blah. So I like brought them in and got on them pretty good. And then I was like, guys, that's the perfect time to learn your music. It's like, I understand that it is boring to sit in the back of a full band rehearsal. What can you do when, you know, one of the directors is working with the clarinet? So like, learn our notes. Like, yeah, you can look at those five measures that you don't know and figure out your notes. So that's something that is, I think, from an early on age, but yeah, just reinforcing that in percussion ensemble, even up through high school. I mean, I remember being in college and you'd have those kids that would be kind of checked out as, you know, our professor was talking to someone else. And then he's like, all right, now let's start back at that place. And then that same person that was checked out missed a whole bunch of notes, like right there, you know? So,
yeah, I always tell them, it's like, it's a lot more fun to play this once you've learned it. So
yeah, for real,
learn it as fast as you can. Like, not knowing your music is lame.
So. Well, I've got a couple more quick ones here, that kind of go together. So I will just combine them. So it is keeping kids motivated and keeping them accountable. Right. And I think those go hand in hand. Like they, you know, for some kids, the only way to keep them motivated is to keep them accountable. Right. So I think you need to be doing some sort of graded, some sort of assessment on their playing, whether it's just like, I don't really think you know, like you came to rehearsal and you didn't really know any of your notes. So I'm not going to give you, you know, your 5 points of participation today or whatever. And like, I don't actually put in grades for my high school kids. That it's like, that's our head director that does that. But we work pretty closely on like when they need to do playing tests and when they need. So it's like, whatever the winds are doing, I just have them, you know, I do that over percussion ensemble or something. So you know, some kids are going to be motivated just by your energy and by choosing good music. That goes a long way, right? Like, don't play super boring, lame, not like music written by not percussionists or bad percussion arrangers, right? There's plenty of bad percussion music out there. So give them good music that's going to keep them motivated. You always want to try to make them reach a little bit as far as their skill level. But you don't want to pick stuff that is too hard, because then that just like has the opposite effect, right? If it's a little bit too hard, then it gives them something to reach for. If it's too hard and that it feels out of reach, and then they end up like being bummed out that they can't play it. And I think that does more damage to your program, you know, than anything. So motivated and accountable. And then, you know, this is my last tip here. Another way to keep them motivated or accountable is go to contests and go to festivals, like do, you know, public performances. I mean, hopefully you're going to at least have them play at a concert, right? Like I know you do a percussion ensemble concert. We do a percussion ensemble concert. But if you don't have a standalone percussion ensemble concert, you know, like my first year at a smaller school that I used to teach at, we didn't have a standalone concert, but we featured our percussion ensembles on one of the, you know, band concerts. And so those kids need to be, they need to get those performance opportunities, and they need to kind of, they need to feel the pressure of having something coming up that they're preparing for, right? If they're, if you're not preparing for something, then like, it's hard to light a fire underneath kids to get them moving, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does. And we, yeah, we do a concert, and I think we've had, like, we're trying to do a new thing, I think, like a recital for all the solos, and like a, like, it's like a performance slash fundraiser slash just another chance for those kids to play their solos in front of their parents and random people. So,
yeah.
I think we're calling it like an honors recital or something like that. I don't know exactly what's happening with that, but yeah. Yeah. Always make sure they're like, yeah, they need to be able, they need to have a goal of working on this music.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's good. Okay. I've got four more, but they're kind of like obvious. So I think I'm going to do just one more, I think. And then, we can wrap this up.
Yeah. You can just rattle them off real quick too.
Yeah,
we don't have to go into depth really.
Yeah. So one would be, I mean, and a lot of current percussion ensembles that come out now, a lot of times the composer will have a suggested setup for that. You know, they'll have like a diagram.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially Tap Space is always good with that.
Yeah, they are.
You don't always have to do that, you know? So trying out different setups that are going to work best.
You do have free will. You don't have to do that if you don't want to.
Yeah. And most of the time it's good. I'm not saying that it's bad, but you know.
I actually make all those and I'm really offended. Yeah.
You make all of them for Tap
Space. I make.
You're the Tap Space setup diagram.
That, dude, know? I would love, that'd be an awesome job if they could pay me to do that.
Yeah. Give them a call.
Okay.
So, but within that setup, also, I try to tell my kids, you know, we don't go through a percussion ensemble season without a kid going like, how do I set this up? And
right.
It could be like they have a snare drum and like two accessories or whatever. And I'm like, well, think about it. Like, try to think about what you're going to have to do. And I'll tell them, you know what? You've got like a week to figure out how you want your setup to be. Especially it's always with toms. It's like, do you want them to be in a line or do you want to have them set up kind of like, you know, kind of like quads would be,
yeah.
or how do you want them? And so let them try to have a little bit of freedom with that while leading them at the same time, but also just try different setups that are going to work. Always be flexible, trying out different mallets and sticks and drums and stuff like that. If a kid's like, what tambourine should I use? Well, I'll be like, go grab three of them and then we'll figure out.
Right.
And then jokes on me. We pretty much only have like two different tambourines.
Yeah. And they're all broken. Yeah. That one doesn't have any jingles. Try again.
Right. And so like, don't like it when a kid asks, like, what should I use? It's like, well, what do you think? Like, especially high school, like they should have some idea of what they should try to use.
And yes.
Sometimes they come up with the right answers and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Like some level of artistic expression. That was always a cool thing in college is like, oh, like what suspended cymbal do I want to use here? What crash cymbals do I want to use here? And then like, you know, not every single time I wouldn't make the right choice. You'd have a conductor say, hey, could we get a darker sound there? Or could we get a lighter or, you know, brighter or whatever. So let them make those decisions. And then if you don't like it, then you can just say, hey, I think we should go with that one. But that's a good one.
Yeah. And then I learned this when we had Tommy Poole from OSU come and he wanted to come listen to our jazz band and he rehearsed them for a minute. And one thing I like that he did is he was trying to rep something. And like, how can I describe it? Let's say it's like a little phrase. Like if they have something not lining up between the keyboards and the battery, let's just say it's like da 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 or something like that. That's not lining up. He would have them, he just had them do it like over and over, but like he didn't count them off, or he counted off like the first time. And then he wanted them to keep going, but he didn't help them. So it was like, he was like, ready, and it was da 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 da, and then like the next three or four were like bad, and then it started to come together because they were like, well,
because they're listening.
Yeah, the conductor's not helping me, so we better start listening to each other and not be playing this thing. So it, yeah, it, you know, it may take 10 or 15 of those repetitions, but like without you having to help them as a teacher, they came together on their own. And I thought I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I do that in Jasmine all the time now. And then, starting to do that in percussion ensemble too, because sometimes they can't watch each other. So they have to just listen. So I thought that was really cool. So if you have a phrase that's not lining up, say, hey, we're going to do this 10 times in a row, ready, go, and then just see what happens.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they can fix it themselves without you spoon feeding it to them.
Well, and then you're teaching them like an aural skill. You're teaching them a listening skill that will go beyond whatever ensemble or piece you're working on currently, you know, like that'll just go all the way through until they're, you know, till they're not playing music anymore.
Right. So,
exactly. Hopefully never, hopefully that day never comes, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But anyway,
that's a cool one. Well, yeah, I think that's it, man.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Well, we had a,
oh yeah, let's do our sound
game. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've got a sound and I'm going to play my sound and then Kevin is going to play his sound. And then I want you to guess and then we'll reveal them in the next episode.
Oh, we're not going to do it now.
who knows when that's going to be?
Our July episode comes
out. Yes. All right. I think mine's going to be pretty easy for most people. So here's mine.
Okay. Do that again, but like right up in that mic. Let's really get it in there. Home.
Okay, what's yours?
Oh, we're going to do them separate. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know what yours is.
Yeah.
You know what mine is because I did it before we started recording.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, that's easy.
I know, yeah. I'll do it in the mic.
Oh, actually, I was wrong. Now that I see it, I was wrong.
Ooh, okay. What is yours?
Mine is a prayer bowl, little prayer bowl that I have sitting on my desk. That's really cool. Like a singing bowl.
Yeah.
It's,
can you like rotate the thing around it too?
Yeah, you can do like the little singing. It takes too long. It's not going to.
Oh.
Anyway, but yeah, it's a little cool thing that I got. I don't know. So I think some kid gave it to me or something like a few years ago. So I thought yours was one of those little frog woodblock things, the little things. That's what it sounded like. You want to tell everyone what yours is?
Yeah, this was a pair of the Heritage musical spoons.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the techniques is you put your finger through the two spoon heads and just pull your hand out.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
But you're right. It does sound
like one
exactly
of those
like those frog.
Yeah, when I didn't see it, that's what I thought it was.
Things.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening as always. We will catch you on the next episode. And good luck with all your percussion ensembles this semester. May your notes be clean and hope all of your performances go well.
Bye. Thank you.